This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Welcome to Baseball Outside the Box, where we bring you the most innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. Glad to have you all on the show again. We have another great, exciting show for you this week. And before we begin, let me thank our producer, Brian Croc. On the other side of the studio window, we have the lineupmediagroup.fm. Go there. They have some great podcasts. They're probably the best podcasters in the world. There's all kinds of topics there. Check it out. Before we begin, I want to give a little shout-out. Just got back from Auckland, New Zealand. What a beautiful country Auckland, New Zealand is. We were there about 5-6 days with the International Sports Group, a group for over 30 years. I've been developing coaches worldwide. I am extremely honored to be part of that as their vice president, President Tom O'Connell. We were really treated first class. Got to tell you, Baseball New Zealand, headed up by Ryan Flynn, CEO. What an outstanding program. It is one of the up and upcoming programs around the world. You will be seeing some players from Baseball New Zealand in the minors and also in the major leagues. They have a lot of players right now currently in college. There are some great athletes there. So shout out to Ryan Flynn. Also want to give a shout out to their staff. What an organization. This is why you know Baseball New Zealand is going to really, really develop some great players and coaches. We were there to work with 55 coaches. When it comes to the development of young players, we had a great staff there. I want to shout out to Chris, Jeff, Pandy, Ian, Dan Tan. Got to love that name. Dan Tan and Ricky. You guys were awesome. Thank you to the 55 coaches who attended the coaches seminar. You guys were great. Great sense of humor. Also, very attentive. Some of the most attentive coaches I've been around anywhere in the world. And got to give a special shout out to our ISG coaches who were on staff there. Reggie Smith, former Major League Baseball player, but one of the top coaches I have ever been around. He was there for the hitting part, but he knows the game inside and out and really is a great instructor. Along with Graham Lloyd, former New York Yankees, talked about pitching. Boy, what a great job. And he's with the national team with Baseball Australia. And we've known Graham a long time. Graham, thanks. You guys did a fantastic job. And also our president, Tom O'Connell, former president of the American Baseball Coach Association, ABC Hall of Famer, written 4 or 5 books. What a first class. My mentor. Thank you to Tom O'Connell. So again, shout out to Baseball New Zealand. Thank you. And let's get to the topic at hand. We've got a great topic for you. I don't know of any podcast that I've listened to, and I've listened to so many that covers this topic. This topic is going to be about umpiring. We want to know the insides of what umpires think, how they train, how they work with, managers, coaches. What's the best way for people to have a great relationship with umpires during games, during, situations that come up that maybe they disagree on. So we're looking forward to having Larry Young. I've known Larry a long time and one of the first class people in the game of baseball at the Major League Baseball level. But he's helped umpires all over the world. Given training programs everywhere, you name it. And he's also a former Major League umpire, currently a Major League Baseball supervisor. So he goes around all the different Major League parks and evaluates all the umpires. Now, Larry's unique also because, he's an umpire, he's a Major League supervisor, but he's also umpired in the World Series in 1996 and 2003. It was the American League Championship Series he did in 1992, 1998, and 2002. Officiated the two All-Star games in 91 and 203. I mean, he's done everything. He's got 6 divisional series. Talk about experience. He was a crew chief for the 204 ALDS between the Anaheim Angels and Boston Red Sox. A great guy. Want to welcome him to the show. Larry Young, how are you, man, my friend?
Hey, Peter, how you doing? Good to hear from you.
Well, it's a pleasure.
You and I have been around the world together.
Yes, sir, and it's a pleasure having you on the show. And I got to tell you, one thing I didn't mention is that Larry travels also around the world. He selects umpires as a supervisor for the World Baseball Classic. And I had the privilege to work with him many events, the Pan Am Games and World Cup, the Olympics. He's at head, you know, it's great to sit next to him and listen to the things he talks about, umpires and the rules, and you can't learn from a better man. So, Larry, I really appreciate being on the show.
Well, thanks. You know, I've been to 22 countries, but I think you've got me beat by far. You're the world traveler.
Yeah,
and
but I heard...
We saw New Zealand and Australia and during the qualifying rounds for the Classic. And you're right, that they're up and coming. Their baseball's getting better and better over there.
Yeah, and you know what? The other thing I was going to bring up, you know, you talk about the travel real quickly. You know, I may have you on countries, but I heard that you now travel pretty in class because of all the miles you have. So you must be traveling a lot more than I do.
That's the only way to go. The only way to go.
No, and you deserve it, man. You've done so much in the game. And listen, before we start, I want to congratulate you on your battle. A lot of people don't know out there. A lot of people know you're around the world, but they don't know that you battled cancer. You're cancer-free as of right now. You know, I just want to congratulate you because I know that you're not modest, but you're not going to tell people a lot about this, but I think it's important to know because, you know, you fought it. I saw some pictures. You lost weight. You're looking fantastic.
Well, you know, I don't think we've won the war yet, but we've won a few battles thanks to the doctors, Dr. at Rush Hospital. He's a genius and found the tumor. We found it early. He removed that, and, you know, there's no cliche, you take one day at a time. That's very true. With cancer, with people that are battling this disease, and there are a lot of us out there, and you just have to take one day at a time. Today I feel great, cancer-free, and we'll worry about tomorrow, but right now everything looks good.
Well, your positive attitude I'm sure helped, and I also read a little story in the article. This doctor, you know, and if you don't mind, you know, I guess that when they first told you about the cancer, you had mentioned your comment was, and correct me if I was wrong, but your comment was something in respect, how long do I have? But he didn't want to hear that.
No, he was like a coach or a manager. He got fiery real quick when I asked him that question. He said, I don't want to hear that. Let's move on. And, you know, I can take care of this. We're going to fight it. We're going to beat it. So that was the right attitude to take with me.
Well, you've been through it, 16 chemos and 25 radiations, unbelievable. God bless you. That's fantastic. And I'm looking forward to, I know we're going to Aruba together. You're going to do an umpire clinic in Aruba, so I'm looking forward to seeing you.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. I look forward to that.
Well, let's do this. Let's jump in because I know coaches, players, and this is for parents also. On Baseball Outside the Box, we believe in educating all three. We think it's a three-tier educational program, because if you don't educate all three and one's missing, then you're going to have issues somewhere. But, you know, there's so much to talk about umpire and umpire relationships and all that. I mean, we can't go through everything. We'll try to highlight some things that, you know, that's important for parents and coaches and players. Let's start with this just to get it rolling. You know, I've had the pleasure at the Mickey Owen Baseball School for 10 years umpiring. And one of the things that I loved umpire. I just every day I went out, I loved to do it. Didn't matter what level I was at. And one of the things that really helped me as an umpire, it helped me become a better manager and coach, not just because I knew the rules, but also because I respect the profession so much because it's so difficult. Tell us about how you kind of got started, why you umpire, you know, why you chose to umpire, and why you would recommend others to get into the profession, whether it's at the younger levels or, you know, their goal is to be a major league umpire.
Well, I started at a very, very young age. I was 13 years old and grew up in a little town called Oregon, Illinois, which is about 90 miles west of Chicago. And I was able to ride my bicycle out to the Little League Diamond and start working out there. And I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the challenge. I was still playing baseball. I played baseball. We didn't have baseball in high school. It wasn't offered in my high school. It is now, but it was back in the 70s. So I turned umpire. Umpired all through high school. was doing high school games when I was still in high school. In fact, I was doing some college games when I was still in high school. And when I got to college, I just started doing more and more. I was started working in the Big Ten, worked in the Alaskan League. I also went to Mickey Owens Umpire School back in 1970. So you and I are both graduates of Mickey Owens Umpire School in Miller, Missouri.
Yep.
remember it well. So, but to me, it was a challenge. I rode my bicycle. I had the outside chest protector on my back like a turtle, and had the mask on top of my head and the shin guards. And I think my neighbors were wondering, what's wrong with that young kid? He's kind of strange. We're riding around his bicycle like that. But it was something I really enjoyed doing. And I recommend it to people that really want to do it. You really want to have to do it. I really don't go up to people and say, you know what, you'd be a good umpire. Let's try it out. I think people have to want to do that themselves. And it goes hand in hand. You know, you said you did, you played, you coached, you managed, and you umpired. I think a lot of people do that. And I think at the youth level, there is a real need for umpires. And there are a lot of opportunities these days. When I first started, there weren't that many opportunities as far as clinics go, but now there are clinics all over the place. And in the Chicago area, there's a ton of clinics that are offered that you can learn to do it. I learned by the seat of my pants and really didn't have any instruction, just made mistakes along the way. And somebody corrected and we moved on. So basically that's how I got started in youth baseball.
Yeah, you know, and what's interesting is I've always heard the term, you know, as an umpire, you start perfect and you have to get better, which is impossible. You know, umpires are human beings. But I also believe that if you can get young kids to start umpiring, you know, at a young age, I think they'll start to appreciate the profession a lot more. And we're not going to have all this, you know, everywhere I go, I personally – and this is Baseball Outside the Box saying this because, you know, we're an open forum. Personally, I think there's too much, you know, complaining, too much umpiring. You know, I'm on Ken Revisa's comment of, you know, if you've got to complain a lot at games, you know, or argue a lot or, you know, argue balls and strikes, you know, does your team need those many calls and are they that bad? Maybe you ought to spend some time practicing more and not worrying about all the calls. But I really believe that young kids should umpire. Whether they're going to get into it or not, just because I think they'll appreciate it when they do play the game, how tough it is to be an umpire. And umpires make mistakes just like young kids make mistakes.
Yeah, and I think you have to separate from the youth level to the professional level. I think it's a different mindset. It's a different game. You know, at the youth level, you're trying to learn how to play the game and you learn how to, and it should be fun. The big thing is to have fun. If you're yelling and screaming at the umpire and the umpire is yelling and screaming back, yeah, that's not fun. It should be fun. And I think managers sometimes and umpires get caught up in what they see on TV at the professional level. The professional level, the managers, if they don't win, they're gone and their livelihood is gone. So it gets very serious at that level. The same thing is true for umpires. If you miss call after call after call, you're not going to stay at the professional level long. But the youth level is totally different. And I don't think that managers and coaches at the youth level should emulate what they see on TV. I think they should be there to instruct, and I think the umpires should be there to help players and not be screaming at each other. Sometimes I think managers get caught up in working the umpire. And they forget to coach. And the umpires spend too much time yelling at the coaches, and they forget the umpires. So if everybody just does their job and is civil toward each other, I think that's what it should be at the youth level.
You know, those are great points, and I really appreciate you saying those because there's a lot of listeners out there that, you know, are dealing with umpires on a daily basis. And I've always believed that, you know, if you deal with people professionally, human beings, you know, treat them like human beings, then you'll get the same respect back. But I got a question for you. There's times where a coach can be, you know, too much in an umpire. And then there's times where a coach or manager, let's say, doesn't say much. Is there a fine line there? Because if you don't say much, sometimes, you know, maybe an umpire can kind of sit there and say, you know, instinctively just not worry about, you know, they know that that manager's not going to get on them a little bit or come out, so they're just going to make the call the way it is and not worry about it. Is there a fine line between the two?
Yeah, I think if you have a manager or a coach and you know that the only time he complains is when he has a legitimate complaint, mm-hmm. as opposed to the manager that's chirping all the time, you tend to listen to that manager more when he comes out and you think, well, he's got a legitimate complaint. I'm not going to listen to this. Whereas the guy that is always chirping in the dugout, you kind of tune him out and say, well, there he goes again. But when that manager comes out that has a complaint, you give him a lot of credence and you listen to what he has to say. I think
sure.
he has more, he has more credence than the other guy.
Absolutely. Now, here on Baseball Outside the Box, we're with Larry Young, former Major League umpire and current Major League supervisor for Major League Baseball umpires. Larry, what I did early on was I sent out an email to a lot of coaches that I know, and I just kind of had them send me some questions, you know, that they thought they'd like to ask a Major League umpire, and it could have been anybody from high school, college, or youth league baseball. And then I filtered through the questions a little bit, kind of picked the ones I felt were very important. I'm just going to get to the heart of some of them. One of them, it's such a big topic all the time. For years, it's been this topic at many different levels, and that's the strike zone. Can you clear up for us what is the strike zone? And then we'll get into, you know, why there seems to be different strike zones with different umpires or also in different leagues.
Well, the strike zone is the hollow below the knee to at the bottom to the top. It's a midpoint between the letters and the belt, and then take the midpoint of that. Now, where the strike zone has evolved over the years has been the high strike. The strike that is at the letters used to be a strike in the 50s and 40s and 60s and so on, but it's evolved now to where it's to that midpoint just above the belt. And I don't really know the reason for it, but that's pretty much where it is right now. That high strike has kind of gone away. I think mainly because a lot of pitchers don't throw it up there. Now, you know better than I, mm-hmm. the playing end of it. Well, if you throw it up there, it's a hitter's pitch, and it's a mistake, and you don't want it up there. So a lot of pitchers don't throw it up there. I can tell you that for an umpire, the high strike is the more difficult one to call. We've made an effort over the years. When I first started umpiring in the big leagues in the 80s, we used to go off the plate and call strikes that were, you know, an inch or two off the plate and outside, thinking that, you know, it's still, a pitch that a hitter can hit. So we used to, you know, we went off the plate, and now we don't do that anymore. The Major League umpires keep the ball on the plate on the corners. So it's such a subjective thing, mm-hmm. The strike zone, and I think it's going to not only be debated now, it's been debated forever, I think it's going to probably still be debated about umpire strike zone, what it is, and there's subtle difference in every umpire. Some umpires, you call what you see, and some umpires are high-strength umpires, some are low-ball umpires, and you know, you just have to adapt to the umpires and adapt to the pitching.
And what do you recommend as far as leagues? Let's take youth leagues, high schools, you know, just stick to the strike zone that's in the rule book?
Yeah, you know, I think if you're at a game and you see ball, 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 that doesn't do anybody any good. So if there's a borderline pitch, we tell umpires your borderline pitches should be strikes. You know, you try to call as many strikes as you can, without going outside of the rules. But, yeah, you have to stick to the rule book, and you have to stick to the league in which you're working. You know, mm-hmm. a youth league is going to be different than a major league game. You have to be more precise in a major league game, but a youth league, I think you can call more strikes.
At the big league level, and that makes a lot of sense. We want young kids swinging the bat, you know, and within the strike zone, and that's good. Now, at the big league level, sometimes, you know, you hear it on TV, but again, the things you hear on TV may not be necessarily true, and that's why it's great to have you on. I would assume as a human being sometimes, and this is an assumption on my part, that, you know, you as an umpire at the big league level, if you have a guy who has a tremendous amount of experience, a hitter, and also he has an eye for a pretty good strike zone, is he apt to get some of those close calls?
No. When you're umpiring, you don't pay attention to who's at the plate. You just can't. You're focused on the strike zone, and you forget about who's at the plate. One thing, though, that I should mention is the K zone that's used by everyone now, Fox, ESPN, TBS. Mm-hmm. The K zone that they use is for entertainment purposes only, and they do have disclaimer on there sometimes. But the reason it's not accurate is it's the same box for everybody. So they put up a box, and it's not accurate because the box for Dustin Pedroia, who is 5'6", 5'7", somewhere in there, is the same box that's used for Aaron Judge, who's 6'7". So that can't be, they don't change it. Now, we have a system that we use to evaluate umpires that changes on every pitch, and it's more accurate. But they put that K-zone up there on the screen and use that as gospel. Say, well, look at this pitch is low, this pitch is high, this pitch is outside. I think on the corners it's pretty accurate, but up and down it's not at all.
You know what? I am so glad you brought that up. That was going to be one of the questions down the line, but I'm glad you brought it up now because it fits within the strike zone we're talking about. And, you know, I wish they would correct that on TV because even as I watch the playoffs, especially playoffs where a lot is on the line, as I watch them, you know, you're always looking at the K zone saying, well, wait a second, you know, look at the pitches that some of the pitches are being missed or vice versa. And now that we know that, I think this is important. I hope they change that and make it accurate on television because that's really misleading. And that's one of the reasons, a great reason right now that, you know, a lot of people are calling for the electronic strike zone. Wow, that could really change the game.
Well, yeah, I don't see that happening. How much do you want technology to take over this game? It's a great game. You know, you love this game. I love this game.
Mm-hmm.
How much technology do you want to interfere with this game? If you're going to put electronic strike zone, let's go a step further and use robots on the field to play the game. And they you know, players aren't perfect either. You know, Ted Williams was one of the greatest hitters of all time, but he failed 6 out of 10 times when he was at bat. You know, how much technology do you want in this game? We're using instant replay now as officiating tool, and I think it's helping calls on the bases. But I don't think the technology is there yet to be accurate as our people are right now. We judge our major league people, and we're judging them to be like 97-98% accurate. Do you want to put a machine back there and make it any better? I don't think it's going to make it any better.
Yeah, that's
care about the electronic strikes. I don't think it's going to happen.
Well, that's a great point, which also brought up. I think a lot of people don't realize 97% accuracy from major league umpires. That's just incredible. What a statistic when you talk about 97% as a human being. That's how good the umpires are. Now, I want to get to this. A couple other things about the balls and strikes, and I want to also get to instant replay that you brought up. But the balls and strikes, for our audience out there, these are always little questions. Tell us about where the ball should, what part of the ball can hit the strike zone. Is it the black? Is it the white? And some of the questions people might have out there on that situation.
Yeah, any part of the ball that hits the strike zone, this is the bottom of the knee, the top of the knee, or on the corners, any part of the ball that hits the strike zone. The black is not part of the plate. The black is there to differentiate between the edge of the plate and the dirt. So the black, people say, well, the pitch was on the black. Well, that should be a ball because it's not part of the 17 inches wide plate.
Now, when they're calling balls and strikes, you see umpires set up in a certain spot That spot that they're setting up in, I know you guys obviously have a lot of training programs, and I've seen some of them, but what's the training protocol you guys have? How do umpires set up behind the catcher, and why?
Well, we set up on the inside of the catcher's shoulder, depending on the batter. If it's a right-handed batter, we set up over the left shoulder of the catcher. And we do that for a couple of reasons. First of all, we call it the slot, and we're looking through the plate and not through the catcher's head, but we're looking through the plate. And this is for two reasons. We think we get a better view of the pitch there, and we're also safer there. When I first started, I used to use the old balloon, the outside chest protector, and we looked over the top of the catcher's head.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't see the low pitch as well as we can now with everybody using the inside chest protector and working in the slot. And it was also very dangerous because foul tips that came back were more likely to hit you if you were directly above the catcher's head. And the foul tips are very concerning to everybody who's working this game, from youth league through major leagues. The foul tips that you take can be very, very dangerous and can cause concussions. So we're trying to be in a position where we're safer and we can see the pitch. And we don't discount the possibility and the importance of the concussions that umpires and catchers can have from foul tips.
Now, if a catcher sets up inside, that's going to be a great point. And, you know, he's sent inside for a fastball, you know, and all of a sudden there's a strike on the outside corner. Is that strike called, or is it tough to call because you're going all the way across the plate?
Well, when he sets up inside, he takes away a slot from the umpire. So the umpire has to make an adjustment there. He has to go up and over the top of the catcher's head. So it's not advantageous for the umpire, but that's what he has to do. But, yeah, again, even if he has to reach for it, he's set up inside and they throw it outside and he has to reach for it, we have to make sure that that ball is on the plate. And even if he reaches for it and it hits part of the strike zone, hopefully we can see it and call it a strike.
Yeah, and obviously you can't see it, you can't call it a strike.
Right, and if the catcher, you know, by moving around, that's something that's fairly new in the last, I'd say, 15 years, where the catchers, instead of calling for a location, are actually moving their whole body inside, outside. It doesn't do, it doesn't make our job any easier.
Sure. Yeah, I'll tell you what, I love that. And the other thing is, what advice would you have? Because I think it's going to help coaches also. What advice do you have for catchers to try to make sure that you give the umpire the best chance to see the play, call balls and strikes?
Well, receiving the pitch is very important. If you can catch a ball cleanly, it gives the umpire a much better chance of getting that call right. If you're pulling pitches, you're taking a pitch and it's outside and you're pulling it, you're telling the umpire, well, that's a ball, but I'm trying to cheat and make it a strike by pulling it back. And you see a lot of catchers, I should say, at the major league level now, doing it on low pitches where they're bringing a pitch up, they catch it and bring it up. That's just telling the umpire, it's a ball, but I'm trying to make it look like a strike. So if you just catch the ball where it's pitched and catch it cleanly, you're more apt to get a more accurate call on that. And if you set up inside and take away what we call the slot or our office, and it makes it more difficult to be accurate. And what you're looking for is consistency and accuracy, and it's hard to do when catchers don't catch the ball cleanly.
Interesting. And, you know, I remember as an amateur when I was umpiring, there'd be times, you know, I was pretty confident that I was doing a really good job, but there'd be times where I felt I missed a call. And, you know, I don't know if I did it on purpose. I don't think I did, but, you know, your mind can play funny games with you. Are there times where sometimes, you know, umpires, just as a human being, because they know they missed a call, that might give that other pitch down the line or next pitch that's borderline, call it for the hitter?
No, that's the real problem. And you mentioned that, you know, umpires are human beings, and it's almost impossible to work a perfect game. I don't believe – I worked 2,800 games in the big leagues, and I don't remember having what I considered a perfect game. It's just almost impossible. And so you try to do your best, try to be perfect, but you don't even up, because even up just makes it you miss one pitch and now you miss two pitches because you're trying to even up. You just have to forget about that pitch and try to realize why you missed it. Usually your timing is too quick. You call it too quickly. There's all kinds of things that can happen with an umpire. He called it too quick. He's moving his head. All kinds of technical things that can happen for you to miss a pitch. But even it up, I just make two wrongs. You just don't do it.
And an interesting question came up, and, you know, as coaches and players, we work a lot on vision training. We think vision's important, obviously, for the game. Sometimes kids work too much on skills and not enough on vision or nutrition or other things. Do you guys go through some kind of vision training to make your vision better?
Yeah, we do. And what we do, we teach our umpires not to move their head. We teach them to track the ball with their eyes only. Now, their eyes are going to follow the pitch, but their head remains steady. Because if you take a pitch and you're moving your head, that gives a blurred picture. It's like you're taking a picture with a camera or an iPhone. If you move your head, you're going to get a blurred vision, or you're going to take a low pitch that's borderline, and you're actually going to drive it lower if you follow the ball with your head. So we tell people, we teach umpires to keep their head still and track the ball with their eyes only. And they're more successful when they do.
You know, that's interesting because, you know, as we talk about vision, you know, we're talking to Dr. Harrison about, you know, the eyes moving to the ball, not the head. So it's very similar. The other area that wanted to discuss a little bit about, and you brought it up earlier, let's talk about instant replay. You know, what instant replay does, you know, when it first was instituted, you know, obviously they're making adjustments along the way. Anytime you bring in something new, there's always, you know, you could always make it better. That's what anything. One of the things I noticed that instant replay does, and really like to get your advice. I believe the Major League umpires agreed to instant replay. I'd like to get your advice on what your thoughts are. I just think from a baseball standpoint, from a coaching standpoint, what happened was, especially on tags, it forces players to stay with the play. That's something we've always tried to teach players. But what's it done for the umpires?
Well, I think a lot of umpires were kicking and screaming in the replay. And now I think the vast majority of Major League umpires, maybe all of them, understand that this is a officiating tool that's beneficial to us because we don't want to miss plays. And I could tell you that I umpired an error before replay, and missing plays was something that kept you up at night and really bothered you, especially if you had one that cost a team a game, and now you're watching it on late night, CNN, and then you're watching it on ESPN, and you're missing it, and it's a bad feeling. Those days are gone on the bases now that we have instant replay. So I think it's been a beneficial thing for our people. We spend time in the replay center in New York, and all umpires take a turn through there, and they're actually the fifth umpire on the field. So instant replay has been good for the for the umpire profession. I think for baseball, so far it's been good. The play that you're talking about, we didn't foresee this happening, I don't believe, when replay came in, where a runner slides in and he comes off the bag by a half an inch and he's tagged, or the tag is kept on him. That's a real problem. I don't think that's, you know, what we were looking for when we were starting to replay. We were looking for the obvious misses, but we had a lot of byproducts that came from replay that we weren't expecting. I think that's one of them.
Sure.
If a guy comes off the base by an inch or 2 inches, and he's tagged, he's out. And I just don't think that's fair. But I don't know how to correct it. It's you see it on tape, and you see that he's off the bag, and he's out.
Yeah, it's there now, and obviously it's going to be tough to change. But you bring up a good point, which also brings up another reference. And I've been lucky with the World Baseball Classic. We don't have a lot of instant replays like they do at MLB, but to be able to see all the different replays. I mean, those guys are looking at it 4 or 5 times, and that goes to show you how good the umpires are. They don't get 4 or 5 times And one of the areas I think that needs to be changed, and again, it's just an opinion by myself, and I think that, you know, managers have the right now to be able to have somebody look at the replay and then call if they want to, you know, have the umpires check it. I really believe they shouldn't have that. I think they should be able to use their own instincts, just like the umpire has to use their own instincts, but that's my opinion.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with you on that. We made steps to correct part of that. We put a time limit on the managers to, it's a 30 seconds that they have to challenge it or move on. Before that, we had managers that were taking forever to decide whether to use their challenge or not. So I don't necessarily disagree with that. The only thing is that we have the technology and we have the ability to change calls that, you know, that's the argument from the players and manager side that they need to have the opportunity to see that. So I don't know if that's going to change, but we have made some strides in correcting that.
That's great. And we are with Larry Young, former Major League umpire and currently Major League Baseball supervisor. You know, Larry, we're going to jump here a little bit because here's another one that just – there seems to be a lot of questions out there with coaches. The left-handed pickoff move. Can you explain what the rule is, and then we can get into maybe some of the questions?
Yeah, I guess the biggest balk on a left-hander going to first base is stepping home with his front foot to throw directly to the base. And if you don't, that creates a big advantage for a left-handed pitcher. So we make the pitcher step directly to the base. Now, if his front foot comes home and lands home, that's going to be a balk. And we have two things that we look at on a left-hander. That's distance and direction. Direction means he has to throw directly to first base. Distance means he has to make a step toward first base. If he picks his foot up and puts it down in the same place, that's going to be a balk. If he picks it up and puts it down toward home plate, that's going to be a balk. So those are the two things we look at, distance and direction for a left-hander going to first base. We also have, and this is virtually impossible to call, in a two-man system, umpiring system, is the pitcher going behind the rubber with his front foot. If he goes behind the rubber with his front foot and then goes to first base, that is a balk. So those are the things that we look for in a left-hander. And the same thing with the right-hander going to third base, although that's less likely to happen, or it happens less.
Sure. And what about, you know, you hear people yell in the 45-foot line on a left-hander. What is that?
That's gone. That used to be a rule. It was an experimental rule. And anybody that's yelling in the 45-foot line is using a rule that's not in existence anymore.
Okay.
That is something that we were experimenting with, and it's not in the rule book. So throwing directly toward first base is the thing now. I should preface this by saying I haven't worked a high school game for a long time or a college game. I don't think it's in their rule books because we have different rule books for each level. But I'm pretty sure it's all levels is now directly toward first base.
You know what? And what I love, I think it's just very simple and keeps the very clean. You know, if they step directly to first, and then then there's less ambiguity. And you know, did he step a little bit this way, or that way? So I'm glad that they cleared that rule up. The other one that's really tough on sometimes with coaches and managers. Maybe there's a way to simplify it a little bit. Batting out of order. You know, you have, you know, somebody who's on, you know, obviously that hits and shouldn't be hitting in that order. And there's so many different situations. How do you guys keep that clear in your minds when that happens?
That can be a very, very tricky and intricate play. Thankfully, it doesn't happen much. I think we had two this year in the major leagues. But the one thing the manager has to realize, if he thinks the batter is batting out of order, if he goes up to the umpire during that batter's at bat, and he finds out the batter is batting out of order, there's no penalty. He's just replaced with the correct batter. He has to wait until that incorrect batter makes an out or gets on base before he brings it to the attention of the umpire. That's number one. how we keep track of it is you go to the last, next to the last hitter. That is the last legal batter. And then you go from there. Then you see who should have batted. And if the person is batting out of order, the way to correct it is the person that should have batted is out. Anything that he does, base hit, base on balls, or anything that advances the hitters, that's nullified. And then the correct batter is put in place. But the man that should have batted is out. And it can get very, very tricky.
You know, and I probably asked that question because that's probably the one I have the most difficulty with. So thank you for clearing that up.
Yeah. We all do. We all do.
Yeah, that's a tough one, boy, and you got to really think about it. Now, you know, as you mentioned, you know, going out there is one thing, you know, that's the easy part for most of us as coaches and managers, you know, when to go out there. I think we understand that, but sometimes just the difficulty of, you know, what the rule is, and I think that helps clear it up. And the other thing is, obviously, you know, your recommendation to managers, coaches, especially at the younger levels, I mean, read the rule book. What else do you recommend to make themselves better?
As an umpire?
As a manager or coach.
A manager or coach. First of all, I remember that you're there for the kids. To me, at the youth level, a coach is somebody that loves the game and wants to give back to the game and likes working with kids. An umpire is a guy or a woman that likes the game, wants to give back, and likes working with kids. So you're on the same page, basically. Once the game starts, it becomes a different story. And my advice to youth coaches working with umpires is, man, first of all, coach the game and don't get caught up in balls and strikes. And realize that the umpires are new, are fairly new, are younger, and they're going to make mistakes, and you know, as well as players. So having patience with them, and if they have a dispute, go out and ask the question. Don't yell and scream, but go out and ask the question, and you hopefully you'll get a like response. You'll have the umpire answer the question in a calm manner. That's the advice that I would give. Just forget about the yelling and screaming, and try to do it in a reasonable manner, and you get more done.
And how would you deal with a manager or coach at the younger levels, could be even high school, that comes out and argues a particular call? It might be a call in the rule book, not another, you know, different call, but one that's in the actual rule book, and you know he's wrong 100%. How do you deal with that when he comes out?
Well, the first thing I try to do, if he comes out and he's upset and he's screaming about a rule, I say, well, first of all, you know, you and I can't scream at each other in this because it requires an explanation and I need to talk to you on it. So we need to stop screaming at each other and talk to each other. And if that doesn't work, then, you know, you really aren't going to get anything done. But if you can calm, it's easy to throw someone out of a game. It's really easy. There's nothing to it. I do a raise your hand, throw them out of the game.
Right.
I mean, it's easy. But keeping them in the game is something that's it's a little different, and it requires a little a talent, a little tact. So calming them down and getting them to talk about what his problem is a real talent.
You know, and you don't have to mention names. It's not about names, but I should be curious to know, you know, what kind of managers in the big leagues did you respect, and why did you respect them? What were they doing particularly that got your respect?
Well, I'll mention some names. No problem. I'm retired now, so what the heck? I can mention names. I would say guys like Tony La Russa, the current managers, I think I liked Joe Girardi is a current manager that I think is good. Paul Molitor is doing a good job as a manager. Those are the guys that don't constantly argue from the bench. If they have a problem, they'll come out when it's necessary. But to constantly give you nonsense from the bench are people that lose my respect. I can remember when I first started, we had Billy Martin, Earl Weaver, Dick Williams, Ralph Hoffman, the guys like that. that would fight you on every pitch. As soon as you walked out there, they would fight you on every pitch, and it was a long day, or sometimes it was a short day for them.
Yeah.
So, but guys like that, you kind of tune out. But people that are reasonable and have a legitimate complaint, when they come out, you say, okay, this has something to say, and I'm going to listen. Mm-hmm. People like that, you have more respect for.
Absolutely. And that's just, you know, it seems like a lot of common sense in dealing with people as human beings and just being professional. Another rule that comes up, and I know these are basic rules, but I think sometimes the basic rules can be overlooked. The infield fly rule. Let's do this. Explain the infield fly rule. And then obviously the biggest question is going to be in the wording that you're going to mention. It will probably be, you know, reasonable catch. I may have misphrased that. But if you can go over that for us, that'd be awesome.
It's going to be runner first, second, and third with less than two outs. That's the first thing. It has to be a ball that is caught with reasonable effort. And that reasonable effort is the gray area, and deciding whether it's an infield fly is a gray area. What you want to do is protect a runner. You don't want a cheap double play on a ball that's hit to the infield. Mm-hmm. Where the fielder is allowed to catch the ball, drop the ball, and turn a double play. And that's unfair to the runner. So you want to protect against this. So when the ball is hit in the infield and there's runners on first and second or bases loaded, and you want to make sure that the ball is hit with reasonable effort, that the fielder can catch it with reasonable effort. And to do that, we use a couple of criteria. We want to make sure that the fielder's the front part, the fielder is facing the infield when he's catching the ball. If he's facing the outfield and trying to catch a ball, that's not a reasonable effort.
Hmm.
We take in weather conditions. Wind is a big thing. If it's windy and the wind is blowing and he's having trouble catching the ball, that's not a reasonable effort. But what you want to do is prevent a cheap double play there.
And
the fielder's position is to see, actually you can have an outfielder that comes into the infield and makes a play and have an out. We had one in a playoff game not too long ago where the left fielder came all the way to the edge of the infield to make a play. It was an infield fly. So
that's an interesting point because that I'll bet most listeners have never seen that or heard that, where an outfielder can actually come in and make that play. And I remember there was a playoff game, don't remember the game, you know, I think it was one where an umpire possibly made the call late or didn't make the call. How's that dealt with?
Well, we want to make sure that the ball's on the way down before we make the call. So mm-hmm. A lot of people say, well, you waited too long. Well, we want to make sure that it's, again, keep using the phrase, but it's important, it's a reasonable effort. So we want to make sure that the ball starts to descend, it starts to come down before he calls it. And that's not late. That's proper.
See, and that's a good way to understand that. And I appreciate you clearing that up because, again, that's something that comes up. A question for you, and we're coming almost to the end, unfortunately, as always we do at all our shows. We got some great stuff, and I think coaches and players and parents are going to learn a lot from around the world when it comes to umpiring. And we want to encourage, you know, kids. We want to encourage coaches to have kids umpire even in their scrimmage games so that way they start to understand the game of umpiring, so that way they start to respect it a little bit more. I think that's important from our standpoint. But is there other rules out there that you think that need to be clarified for some coaches out there so that way, because this is a great opportunity to do that?
I think one of the things that we were talking about is rules that should be changed, and I think one of the rules that should be changed is the 45-foot line. The batter interfering with the batted ball or thrown ball in the 45-foot line between home and first base. I think that they should do away with the 45-foot line. The 45-foot line was put in the 1800s when the foul line actually ran through the middle of the base. And there were so many collisions at first base that they decided to put in a runner's lane. Well, when they changed in the 1800s from putting the foul line right through the middle of the base to putting it to the side, they kept the 45-foot line. And I really don't think it's necessary to have that anymore. You don't have any runners laying between first and second, second, third, third, and home, but you do have one between home and first. So I was on the rules committee. I was the first umpire on the rules committee back in when I was still active as an umpire. And I brought that up, and it went nowhere. So, but I do feel that's one rule that should be changed.
You know what? I agree with you. I think that's a great point you brought up. And you know, and as we know, I mean, and I'll say it here on Baseball Outside the Box. Baseball sometimes has been a game that's been reactive. It's been more proactive recently, but in the past been reactive. And it's a traditional game, and sometimes tradition is hard to change. I mean, we on a very simple note, sometimes you know we still call the foul pole a foul pole, even though if it hits either side, it's a fair pole. But, you know, those are small little things that hopefully can be changed. But this one here, I really like the 45-foot line. I think that would really make the game a lot easier. I'll tell you what, Larry, we're going to do two things. The last question I have, and then I'm just going to open it up to you and let you say anything you'd like, you know, to coaches, players, and parents that could help them with the relationship with an umpire or with rules, or whatever you think is important. The one question is, now, young kids, we don't want, you know, we as coaches, you know, we always tell our young players, you know, you don't argue balls and strikes. You don't worry about the play. You let the coaches talk to the umpires. You just deal in playing the game. As we get older, we realize that there's some players at the even at the minor league, major league level, that they do question sometimes balls and strikes, but they do it in a way that people don't know. Is there a way to question that that's more professional, that you guys, you know, kind of let the guys, you know, have their say?
Yeah, I if you ask a question, you ask a reasonable question about where the pitch is at, and so you have, where do you have that pitch, that's totally legitimate. That should require the umpire to answer in kind. Tell them where the pitch was and where you had it. It may not solve the question, but at least the player knows where you're coming from, and if you do it, just say, you know, where do you have that pitch? Instead of yelling and screaming and, you know, making a big deal out of it. And I understand, you know, I played too, and I was not, you know, I played more in football than baseball, and I was not a good citizen in football. I could tell you, I got kicked out of my last high school football game because I was screaming at the official. I'm kind of embarrassed to say that, but, you know, and I understand that. I understand a player becoming angry during a game.
Sure.
So, but you just have to try to control it.
Yeah, and at the major league level, you're dealing with professionals who every hit, every run, every, you know, strike counts because they're looking at stats. It's their livelihood, not only about winning and losing, but it's also contracts and how much money they make. I mean, there's so much pressure at the big league level. It's incredible how you guys deal with it. And as you mentioned, the percentage, 97% accuracy, it's just unbelievable. And on a daily basis, you've got to deal with different players, different managers. So again, I have so much respect for umpires. And as a manager and coach, I'm very careful what I say, how I say it, because, I respect the profession so much. But the other one that just kind of came up when you mentioned something, and I remember as an amateur umpire, I did this, and I probably was wrong, but there'd be times, not many, but there'd be times where I knew I missed a ball and strike, and this, and you know, I'd say something to the catcher like I missed it. Probably wrong thing to do?
No, not at all. I've done that to pitchers, too. You have to kind of pick your spots here because if you get a guy that is constantly complaining, he says, I know you missed it. But if you tell a guy that, you know what, that's on me, I missed that one, you'll get that pitch. That can go a long way into a relationship between an umpire and player. And umpires admitting that they make a mistake, there's nothing wrong with that. We do make mistakes. You know, we're not perfect. We're not going to be perfect. And to admit that you make a mistake is not a bad thing.
You know, and I'm just looking at the time. We do have a couple more minutes. I'm going to throw another one at you. This is probably a controversial one. We'll end it with this and also your advice to everybody. Sometimes, and it depends on the level, not all, but sometimes umpires get a good or bad rep. I'm not sure that they're very defensive. How do you deal with that in your umpire training?
What do you mean? Who's defensive?
The umpire. That's a great way to end that, isn't it?
Yeah. Go ahead. Threw you out, Peter.
That's right.
Yeah, there are times you umpire so many games, and there are times where you're tired of listening to the comments from the dugout, and there's times when you have to be aggressive as an umpire. Mm. There's times that you have to put a stop to things. There's times you have to say, "Okay, there's no more. I'm not going to listen anymore," and you have to draw the line. That's part of controlling the game, and to do that, you have a little experience and know how to do it without throwing everybody in the bench out. And there has to be a fine line between listening to the complaints and throwing people out. There has to be a medium in there somewhere. So there's a time when you listen, and there's a time when you have to be aggressive as an umpire.
Yeah, and I'm sure when you have a three-game series or five-game series, whatever the series is, you've got these guys for a longer period of time. That can make it even tougher. And so we are coming to the end, but I want Larry to kind of give us a little closing here where he mentions, and just talk about anything you want to say to our coaches, players, and parents out there that might help them understand, the relationship between a manager, coach, and umpire, and so forth.
Well, I guess I would tailor the closing remarks to the amateur, younger coaches and managers that are working with younger kids, and the umpires that are working with younger kids, to realize that, first of all, it should be fun. If it's not fun, it defeats the purpose. And I've got a young grandson that's starting to play T-ball now, and he's having fun. I hope he has fun throughout his playing career. That's number one. Dealing with umpires, coaches should realize that the umpires are inexperienced. They're going to be inexperienced if they're working the lower level games, and they're going to make mistakes. Coach the game first. If you have a question, ask the umpire. Yelling and screaming at this level, either at the players or at the umpires, is just counterproductive. So I guess the big thing is to make sure the kids have fun.
Outstanding. And you heard it from Larry Young, former Major League umpire. He has umpired everywhere, all over the world, and he's umpired at the big league level in American League Championship, Divisional Series, All-Star Games, World Series. He's been everywhere. We really appreciate his time today. Larry, can't thank you so much, because I think this is really going to help. It's a special topic. Like I said, I haven't seen any podcasts that have had umpires on. I think we need more of this. And I think leagues, I want to recommend the leagues that you bring in your umpires to talk to your parents, coaches, and players. Have a little session where they talk to all of them. So that way you get that feeling of what the umpire is looking for, and then you build a better relationship. So, Larry, I want to thank you, man. Can look forward to seeing you in Aruba. And thanks for being on the show. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Peter. Good talking to you. Take care.
All right, and God bless you. I'll be with you just in a second. And we are closing here, so don't forget, everybody, thanks for joining us. Don't forget to go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/baseballoutsidethebox, and our website, baseballoutsidethebox.com, along with all our social media, Twitter, @baseballout. And do us a favor, if you're a first-time listener, join the show. Go to baseballoutsidethebox.com. Go to Stitcher and to iTunes, join, give us a rating. If you love the show, give us a 5-star rating. If you don't love the show for some reason, email me. But email me if you have any questions. We want to hear your input. Our email, info@baseballoutsidethebox. Again, special thanks to Larry Young. Also, a shout out to Baseball New Zealand for hosting us, the International Sports Group in New Zealand, for the Coaches Clinic. It was outstanding. We look forward to coming back. It looks like ISG will also be going to Japan. And remember, coaches, continue to listen to the show. Coaches' education is the key to building the foundation of our sport. So keep getting smarter by listening to the show that interviews baseball's best coaching minds with innovative thoughts that love the challenge, the status quo. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. Have a great coaching day, and we will see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.